Good morning, and thank you for joining me on The Path to Liberty. I'm Michael Bolden with the 10th Amendment Center, and this is the show for Monday, February 13th, 2023. And this episode, I think, is a pretty important warning as we're facing almost constant pressure of new or increased federal gun control, whether it's proposals in Congress or really more often lately, it seems like just executive orders and writing new laws at the ATF level. ATF shouldn't exist anyways. We have to pay attention not just to the people proposing the new stuff, but we also have to pay attention to the people who claim to protect the Second Amendment, but really, behind the scenes, well, it's kind of sometimes a sleight of hand if you're not paying attention closely. They claim to protect it, but really they're giving a green light for more and more and more and more. In this episode, I want to dive right in because it started out with a question. At least my thought process on putting this together started with a question that we posted over on Twitter just recently. Of course, if you're not following us at 10th Amendment, you should. It's a lot of fun sometimes. But here's the question. Who is more dangerous? A, and we're talking about state-level politicians regarding the right to keep and bear arm in this bear arms in this specific question. The state politicians who try to pass new gun control, or B, the politicians who claim to protect the Second Amendment but then pass legislation to ensure that their state will keep helping the ATF violate your rights. Those of you who followed this show, listened or watched it for quite some time, you know where I'm going with this. Those politicians who claim to create a so-called Second Amendment sanctuary or protection against federal gun control enforcement, but really they've created so many loopholes in their legislation that it's absolute garbage. It's a green light for more federal gun control. And we follow along. The reason this comes up for us is because we push very hard year in and year out to work with states and localities to follow James Madison's advice from Federalist 46. He told us how to defeat federal programs without relying on the federal government to somehow magically limit its own power, which almost never seems to happen, of course, right? Well, it doesn't ever happen. Otherwise, we wouldn't be living under the largest government in history, and it's always not enough for most people or for many people. Well, Madison in Federalist 46 said, well, you don't have to rely on the feds. How you defeat federal programs includes four things. One, primarily, was a refusal to cooperate with officers of the union. This includes states, localities, their political subdivisions, and, of course, individuals. And Madison told us that if a single state did something like this, it would make it very difficult for the feds. But if a number of adjoining states or a number of states had the same approach in unison, it would create an environment the federal government would hardly be willing to encounter. Most of those are me paraphrasing, but Madison said that they would hardly be willing to encounter. And that was at a time when the proposed federal government was going to be so tiny in comparison to what we have today, it would be almost unrecognizable for 99.9% of the people, probably all of us, including me, because I've never seen anything like that in my own lifetime. I've only lived under this monster state of today. Anyway, so we work very hard to do this. And unfortunately, a number of fakes, shams, politicians. Richard Henry Lee once told us that politics is the science of fraud and politicians are the professors of that science. He couldn't have been more correct because when it comes to protecting the right to keep and bear arms, a few people are getting it right or going on the right path. Of course, we know the Missouri Second Amendment Preservation Act. I saw a few people out in the chat, Liberty Revolutionary and others from Missouri. Amazing work over a number of years to get the Second Amendment Preservation Act passed in Missouri. There, they ban enforcement of all kinds of federal gun control, past, present, and future, and a number of law enforcement agencies throughout the state started severing ties with the ATF. They just withdrew from ATF joint task forces, and of course, the feds want to sue to force them to continue doing that. This, we know, is a good thing. Well, not the suit, not the ATF, but the fact that they're actually doing this. In Arizona, they take a softer approach, but they're doing similar. Montana, it's limited as well, doing similar, but it's very straightforward where they're not participating in enforcement of at least some. Now, here in Utah, unlike those three states, here from Mike Meharry just last week on the 10th, he said the Utah House passed a, quote, this is the name of the bill, the Federal Firearm Enforcement Limitation Act. Federal Firearm Enforcement Limitation Act sounds like they're going to limit or restrict or championing that they're going to cut down on federal enforcement or enforcement of federal gun control, at least on a state level. But he said they passed this thing called the Federal Firearm Enforcement Limitation Act that almost guarantees that federal gun control would continue being enforced by the state. And I think this is a category B if we're looking at that first question, who's more dangerous? A, the people who propose new gun control, or B, the people who claim to protect the protect the state from violations of the Second Amendment, but then sneak in all kinds of stuff that will continue the violations of the Second Amendment. Give it a green light. I'm going to give some details on Utah specifically. And the reason, whether you live in Utah or not, this is very important stuff. Because we see more, actually, I mentioned three states that are doing some positive things. We could maybe include Idaho with a number of laws that they've passed in recent years, but it's a little convoluted in Idaho, so at least three states are doing the right things. But more states are actually taking the fake Second Amendment sanctuary approach than the proper approach. They're claiming to do something, but then the activists on the ground or the legislators or the gun rights organizations like working with law enforcement. And as soon as law enforcement gets their hands on the legislation, they're like, well, we need to continue this, 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 this. We need these exceptions. And when it's all said and done, the enforcement is going to continue at almost 100%. Even if it was down to 99%, I guess we could say 1% is positive, but I don't know about that, to be honest with you. So I'm going to get to the details on Utah in just a moment, but we should pay attention to this no matter what state we're in, because we got to learn what's happening before we have almost all the states in the country just giving a green light to participate with the ATF. And it does continue a pretty serious trend. We've covered, there are so many states taking the wrong approach, surprise, surprise, and then people supporting them, that we had to dedicate a section of our most recent State of the Nullification Movement report. That's over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/report. If you want to learn about the strategy to defeat federal programs without relying on the federal government to limit its own power, not just James Madison, but a lot of other stuff, plus how it's being implemented on all kinds of issues today, not just the right to keep and bear arms, you have to get our free annual report over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/report. But back to Mike Meharry's coverage of what's going on in Utah. This is House Bill 219. Again, it's called the Federal Firearm Enforcement Limitation Act. Mike says on the surface, and this comes from Representative Carrie Ann Lisenby. Don't know her, but I'm not a fan. On the surface, the legislation would prohibit state and local agencies from, quote, implementing, enforcing, assisting, or cooperating in the enforcement of a federal regulation on firearms, firearm accessories, or ammunition that isn't in state law. It would also prohibit the expenditure of public funds for the same. So it sounds pretty good on the surface. Like, okay, it's sold to the public. It's titled, we're going to limit, restrict enforcement of federal gun control. And then we're going to say that we're banning the implementation, enforcement, assistant, cooperation, all kinds of stuff that sounds very broad that we include in our own style of model legislation, Second Amendment Preservation Act. And then there's a bunch of caveats. And Mike says the legislation includes so many exceptions, it would do virtually nothing in practice or effect. And language in the bill would likely be, and this is an under, this is just, Mike is a professional reporter by trade. And I mean, he left that career behind to work in activism here with 10th Amendment Center. He also does a lot of writing and podcasting for Shift Gold, working towards Sound Money. But this is a guy who's got some skills in writing, and he came from the mainstream approach. And this is definitely a little soft for my taste. It would likely be you know, I really respect how he approaches this because, you know, we want to be able to look back on it and say, well, maybe it didn't play out like that. Anyways, language in the bill would likely be a green light for state and local law enforcement to keep working with the ATF to violate the Second Amendment. And on February 9th, the House passed this bill by a vote of 60-13. So either they're all ignorant and idiots, and the people who love the Second Amendment or claim to, almost all of them voted for it. They see the first part of this, and then they don't read through any of the caveats, and they think it's okay. And the people who love gun control actually voted against it. I would actually think it would be the other way around if they were really understanding what's going on. And I'm not sure. Maybe they're just all ignorant. But, well, we'll get to ignorance and freedom in a little bit from Thomas Jefferson. But anyways, like I was saying, this continues a trend. And here from our State of the Nullification Movement report, we say these laws, These are the Second Amendment sanctuaries, a section covering the worst of the worst. These laws were sold as bold moves against federal gun control. But in reality, they don't ban any specific action, or they include language that opens significant loopholes, like what we're seeing happen in Utah. And my goal in using the Utah language as an example is kind of a whipping boy, I guess we'll call it. I'm not sure where that phrase came from, but I'm sure it's a bannable term these days, but who knows? You guys get where I'm going here. We're going to hammer on the Utah legislation and the people supporting it because we want to make an example of that so people don't fall for the same trap, because that keeps happening. One new law we write in the report even asks permission from the feds to stop enforcing federal gun control. That's Tennessee. But if you want to read that, I will link to it over in the show notes over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. Now, we have a bunch of states that have taken the bad move. North Dakota, Arkansas, West Virginia, Texas, Oklahoma, Wyoming, and I just mentioned Tennessee. So what is that, like seven states that have gone the wrong direction? They've passed something claiming to create a Second Amendment sanctuary, but really all they've created is a sanctuary for the ATF, in my view. Because when you give a green light to continue helping the ATF, that is, you're protecting the ATF versus protecting the rights and liberties of the people, protecting the Constitution, following your oath, etc. So what are the loopholes going on in House Bill 219 in Utah? First, Mike writes, the proposed law would allow state and local police to enforce federal gun control if, quote, the primary, now he highlights primary, that's not in the actual text highlighted, but it does say it, and we have to understand when they use these words, they mean something. As long as the primary purpose of the cooperation with the feds is not the investigation or enforcement of a federal regulation on firearms, ammunition, or firearm accessories. So as long as it's not the primary purpose, so they could be, for example, and there are hundreds of these around the country, on a state-federal joint task force for drug control, the unconstitutional war on drugs from the federal level, working with them, and that's where they do a lot of gun control actions as well. So as long as they're participating in trying to enforce some other federal law, I don't know why the states have to be paying for enforcement of federal law when it's different jurisdictions, but that's a different question for a different episode. But Mike continues saying, that means all state and local police would have to do is, well, claim they are working on a drug case or some other investigation, and then they could help enforce federal gun control to their heart's content. In fact, most federal firearms enforcement is in conjunction with other investigations. So the first caveat is, as long as the primary purpose isn't federal gun control, you can go ahead and continue enforcing that federal gun control. So as you were doing some other thing, you were working with OSHA, whatever it may be, this is their excuse. That's the loophole. So either we have to trust the government employees on the state level to tell the truth that they were there for some other reason, or we have to trust the ATF, which is an illegal organization in the first place. Anyways, I should actually say a quick hello to everyone out in the live chat. I really appreciate you guys being here. I want to get back to these loopholes in Utah in just a moment. There's Richard Banks, Liberty Revolutionary, who I just mentioned over in Missouri. M. Gabriel, Dave Simmons, Kirk Morrison, Brandon, Too Tall 509, Senator D.T., Clay Kent, Mr. Greenbottle, Sharon Patriot, blindly follow everyone in New Mexico. That's a good one. Haji in Michigan, Murray Ray also in Michigan, Douglas Fox in Tennessee, Lawrence Smith in West Virginia, Outlaw, Liberty Gal in DFW. I appreciate everybody being here. I know I'm skipping over a handful of people, and I normally say hi to everyone at the beginning to allow people a minute or two to get notifications to join us on the live stream, but I thought I'd try this kind of fun change of pace here, for me at least. And I did mention earlier that if you want to follow along with the report that I'm citing here about Utah, the tweets, I've got another episode coming up, a letter from Thomas Jefferson here in just a moment near the end. You got to follow us over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. There, about 1 to 2 hours after the live stream is done, I publish a blog post for every episode, and there's a show link section where I will include all of that stuff. So this is just the first exception. I think the first exception in and of itself would create an environment where at least 95% of all federal gun control cooperation on a state and local level would continue. That's just my gut instinct from how I've seen this play out. I do not have data to back this up for those of you who geek out about that kind of thing. But in general, that makes it very easy. We've seen how this worked with civil asset forfeiture. The way it played out in a number of states, and it still plays out today, is a state restricts local law enforcement from doing civil asset forfeiture, which is taking property without a criminal conviction. And they change it and say, well, the only way you can keep someone's property is if you can prove that it was used to benefit or profit from criminal activity. Now, there's an issue with even that, because most things that are crimes on the books on a state and a federal level really shouldn't exist. But at least it's moving the ball in the right direction. But what happens soon as you restrict law enforcement, as soon as you restrict the cop organizations from doing this basically government-sanctioned theft, they just start saying everything is a federal case, because the federal government also has an asset forfeiture program and something called equitable sharing, where they divvy out. So what happens is, and this happened here in California like crazy, when they restricted civil asset forfeiture in California, the cops basically couldn't, under state law, take people's property. So what they did was, well, they pulled somebody over, and instead of trying to prosecute them or arrest them under state law, they'd let their buddies in the ATF or the DEA or the FBI know that something was going on, because a lot of times these crimes have listings under state and federal law. That's why you got to repeal the stuff on a state level as well. And they say, hey, this looks like this could be a federal case. We think this person drove across state line or whatever. This is a Commerce Clause issue. And so then the feds say, well, okay, we're going to adopt this case as a federal violation, a federal crime, but you're going to partner with us through our task force that we're already on, and you continue doing the work. And so then, instead of following the state law and getting restricted from stealing people's property, they're now partnering with the ATF, which shouldn't exist in the first place, and then they hand all the seized property to the ATF, and then the feds through the FBI, the DOJ, they take 20% of it, keep it, and they send 80% back to the local law enforcement agency. So it still continues, because the feds encourage local law enforcement to act as part of a national police state, which was never authorized by the Constitution. So the same thing I expect would happen on, because we've seen this over and over, state by state. It doesn't matter where you are. As soon as you restrict them on a local level, they just partner with the feds. So I would expect the same thing to happen with this first exception, which isn't even the worst one in Utah. So let's get to number two. The second one is, it allows state and local police to enforce federal gun laws, quote, if they are serving on or participating in a federal or federally funded law enforcement task force or program, if investigation of, this is crazy, they can continue enforcing, they're banned from enforcing federal gun control, except in cases where they are serving or participating on a federal or federally funded law enforcement task force or program, if investigation and prosecution of state or federal firearms regulations are part of the duties of the federal task force or program, or if, quote, the law enforcement officer, state employee, or employee of the political subdivision is compensated by federal funds. So just, this is the broadest thing I've literally ever seen in one of these scammy Second Amendment sanctuary bills on a state level. It is probably the worst thing I've ever seen. They basically say, you are not allowed to enforce federal gun control unless you work with the feds to enforce federal gun control, or if the feds pay for it. I mean, it's basically 100% all the time they're going to put in law, which wasn't there before, that they could just do this all the time. Before, we just had to kind of hope that sometimes they weren't doing the wrong thing, and in most cases they do. But anyways, Mike continues, he says, most cooperation between federal and state law enforcement happens through these task forces. There's literally hundreds of joint terrorism task forces, joint drug control task forces, joint gun control task forces. There's all kinds of things where the feds work with state and local law enforcement. They sign what are called MOAs or MOUs, Memorandum of Understanding, Memorandum of Agreement, and then they just work together. And then once the local law enforcement becomes part of the federal task force, they're no longer local law enforcement. They're federal agents. So, and the states often pay for it as well. So maybe someone brought this up in committee or something and said, well, we shouldn't be paying for this. And of course they shouldn't, but you shouldn't allow your agents of your state to be helping the federal government violate the rights of the people of your state at the same time. Anyways, Mike continues, most of this cooperation happens through these task forces. On top of that, the feds could simply send money to a state or local police department to enforce federal gun control, because it just says straight up, they can continue enforcing federal gun control as long as the feds pay for it. Now, is that really the problem that we're facing when it comes to violations of our right to keep and bear arms, that it costs too much or that the wrong people are paying for it? If they want us to do this, if they want us to attack your liberty, well, they just need to come up with the cash, which they stole from you in the first place, either through taxation or through the printing press, which is stealing through inflation. So they're basically, I think this one is very dangerous because it's almost like they're waving a flag, trying to be sneaky about it, but they're telling the current administration, which is terrible on this. The previous one was terrible on this as well. They're all terrible, but the current one is always the worst because we're living under them. And they're telling all future administrations, hey, want to ban assault weapons. Even though I hate that term, it's incorrect, but you want to ban something, we've got your back. This is what Utah HB 219 is telling the ATF, telling the president, telling Congress, telling everybody. They're saying, you want to enforce some restriction, we are there for you. We're just going to need a little loot to get the job done. And that is absolutely repulsive to me that anyone would take that kind of position. I will sell you out for cash. That's problematic all through history. Anyways, a number three here. Finally, Mike writes, this is Mike Meharry's article. Of course, I will link to that in the show notes. 10thAmendmentCenter.com/path to liberty. He says, finally, HB 219 specifically authorizes state and local agencies to refer a case to the feds, get this, if they reasonably believe a federal law regarding firearms, ammunition, or firearms accessories has been violated. Seriously, this would encourage, he said, state and local police to tattle to the feds. Basically, they're saying, hey, remember how, this is how I think of it. We used to live in a society where snitches got stitches, and now we've got so-called Second Amendment champions on a state level here in Utah, and this type of thing happens all the time, but this is one of the worst as well, basically saying, well, you're not allowed to enforce it, but if you see that a federal law, gun control measure is being violated, you can go ahead and call the ATF. It specifically authorizes them to contact the ATF, to refer a case to the ATF if they find someone with so supposedly illegal firearms, ammunition, or firearm accessories. And that is a really, really nasty approach. Now, on the other hand, here's some positive news. This is a lot of negative garbage, so we got to have a little positive. I try to always find the silver linings here. On the other hand, in the Free State Project in New Hampshire, they were reporting, here's a tweet from them up on the screen. I will link to it in the show notes. They were covering a hearing that was on House Bill 474, Protection of Personal Property and Natural Rights. I forget the title of the legislation, but it's from Representative Tom Mannion. And they had a hearing on this just this last week. They will be having a vote sometime later this week, I think on Thursday, in committee. And then it goes to the full House, whether they pass it or not. But here's the difference in approach. In Utah, they're basically saying you can snitch as long as you get cash. You can enforce as long as you're already working with them. You can continue. On the other hand, the sponsor of the legislation in New Hampshire, which would actually ban almost all federal gun control enforcement in New Hampshire by the state and localities, he said, quote, in committee, the ATF is an illegal operation. Totally different. Different mentality, and it's good to see at least someone telling the truth, because the ATF in and of itself is an illegal operation. And how do you deal with criminals? Probably not as aggressively as some of you would like, but this is a really smart thing that I'm surprised I never thought of. But of course, it comes out of Free State Project because they've done this kind of things over the years. And I'm not sure, I haven't looked to see if they amended the legislation to include his recommendation. But Mannion, during the hearing, he called for an early warning system, a warning system to alert New Hampshire residents when ATF agents are in their area. Now, if the state is going to do anything, they first need to stop participating in helping the feds. And that's one thing that's really good. That's what we're seeing happen in Missouri, what we're seeing happen in Arizona, what we're seeing in a more limited area and even more limited in Montana. Maybe we'll see it play out like that in Idaho. I'm not too confident, but possibly. So we're starting to see states withdraw resources and support. Tom Mannion with HB 474 is saying not only do we have to do that, but he was encouraging, and maybe this is just a suggestion or his idea, but I'm not sure if it's going to be in the final bill, but he wants the state to put together a warning system. Soon as someone finds out there's ATF agents, I don't know, what is it going to be, like a tornado siren or something? I'm not sure what it's going to be, but if we're going to compare what's going on, at least the proposal in New Hampshire versus what, and I would actually take, even if they don't pass anything in New Hampshire, they're better off with nothing than what happened or what is going to be pushed through in Utah. I'm certain they'll probably pass it unless the people there get pissed off and suddenly I have way more reach than what I've ever had and we can actually impact that. But who knows? Utah House Bill 219 is a total different approach. Meharry sums up that Utah approach like this. In effect, with all the exceptions, HB 219 prohibits state and local police from cooperating with the enforcement of federal gun control unless they're partnering with the feds to enforce federal gun control. Because that's really what it gets down to. Stop doing it unless you're already doing it and you want to continue doing it. And here's how I put it on Twitter. Today, a Utah committee, and this is when the committee first passed it, passed a bill to ban state enforcement of federal gun control unless A, they're mostly doing federal drug prohibition. And then it's okay. B, they're part of a gun control task force with the feds. So if they're just already part of a task force or if they join a new one, then it's okay. Or C, if they're just narking on people to the feds. And I didn't even include the if they're just paying for it, which is pretty awful as well. And I think, as I put it here, it's maybe the worst one I've ever seen. And that brings me back to that first question. Who is more dangerous? And I think you guys know where I'm leading with this. I think the people, if I can only answer A or B, they're pretty equal. They're obviously all really bad. But I do lean towards B because we get the same results either way. You actually have people pushing for gun control and then you get it and it gets enforced. Or the people who pretend to protect it, encouraging people to lower their guard maybe, which you shouldn't, but it's actually what happens. And then you still get all the enforcement that would happen under A. And in many ways, I think A is at least being obvious about it. It's the scammy B, category B, where they're pretending to be good that I think is far more dangerous, because the more that people are aware of what's really happening, the more likely it can be successfully opposed. But I actually came up with an option C in response to that tweet. I said if there was a C, I'd actually say the most dangerous are the people who keep voting for the scammers as a defense against the obvious outward gun grabbers. So the people who vote for B as a defense against A. And Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to Charles Yancey, January of 1816, he put it this way. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. So as long as people remain ignorant and they just blindly say, oh, Team Blue is bad on the right to keep and bear arms, Team Red probably isn't awesome, but some of them are really great. And look, they're going to limit enforcement of federal gun control here in Utah, or they were really great in Wyoming and they worked with the cops to get this done. But then when you read through the legislation, you find so many loopholes. You think that those loopholes are not going to be exposed almost constantly. And if you think your local law enforcement people are great, well, it's certainly going to be the ATF who's throwing cash at them and encouraging the leadership of those agencies to push their people who are just going to follow orders most of the time instead of following their oath to do the wrong thing. This is really, really, really bad stuff. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. And I take the Jeffersonian approach here because ultimately that's kind of my answer C. As long as people are ignorant of who's being good on the right to keep and bear arms, and there are not many, and they keep supporting bad guys to defeat bad guys, what do you think the result's going to be? More gun control. And more gun control. And we could apply the same thing to basically any issue. But this one, I think, on the Second Amendment sanctuaries, it's more stark than in any other area. I want to include one other thing that I should mention for you guys. Four Essential Steps to Nullify Federal Gun Control is an episode I did in January of last year. I will link to it in the show notes. It is not the all-encompassing. It's going to bring it to an end. But four essential steps that need to be done to get the ball rolling. I will link to that in the show notes. I'm going to take a look over in the live chat and see if there's any comments or questions that I can get back to here in just a moment. But I want to mention that if you support the work we're doing, you want to help us get this kind of truth out to more people. It's not great news, but it's important that people are aware of what's happening. Nothing helps us get this kind of work done more every single day, more than the financial faith and support of our members. You can join us for as little as $2 a month. We also have annual, 5-year, and lifetime options over at 10thAmendmentCenter.com/members. Again, 10thAmendmentCenter.com/members. Let me take a look over in the live chat and see if a comment or question. Taco, that's a pretty good one. People's Democratic Socialist Republic of California. That's Dave Simmons. I'm with you, my buddy. It's rough. You know, I've often seen these kind of ranking systems on how the states are on various economic or social issues or whatever. And I had often thought that we should troll everybody who does these things at some point from the 10th Amendment Center. Maybe it's not trolling. Maybe it's actually the truth. And if we were going to rate the Constitution Index of how all the states are, I guess that every state would be an F. Now, maybe a few states are moving towards a D minus right now or a D, but so far everyone fails when it comes to following the Constitution of the founders and ratifiers and supporting the liberty of the people. Sometimes you find one state or one locality that's really good on one issue, but they're terrible on everything else. So we've got a long, long way to go to get to a real land of the free. Kirk Morrison shoots rattlesnakes. Well, I don't know if we're going to have hunting season yet. That's not the type of thing we're pushing for. We certainly want to have a refusal to comply on the state and local level. And then people have to learn how to exercise their rights, whether they get permission from government or not. Because it's not really liberty if you have to actually first get a permission slip from someone in power. Thomas Jefferson told us, "A free people claim their rights as derived from the laws of nature, and not as a gift of the chief magistrate." And Sharon over on YouTube has a good point. The people lack courage these days. People lack courage. Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom, Thomas Paine told us, must, like men, undergo the fatigues of supporting it. It's not going to be easy to be free in the face of the largest government in history. It wasn't easy for the revolutionaries from 1760 to 1775 to do what they did, and from 1775 through 83 to do what they did. But they certainly wanted more freedom, and they undertook the difficult nature of supporting it. Salt Laker says ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and fascism. Or just remove the first two, because that's really what it is. And Sharon thought that one was funny as well. Clay Kent says, awesome as usual. Haji says, financial support of TAC is a great investment. High return, no risk. Thank you very much. I'm not rolling around like a rich dude around here. Everything gets reinvested. We don't even take in that much money, to be honest with you, especially in comparison with some of these big organizations. Some years ago, I actually did a comparison between the fundraising between us here at TAC and Heritage Foundation on the conservative side, and Southern Poverty Law Center, which named me personally as one of the leaders of the radical right in their hate watch some years ago. And I was certainly targeted by them and have been for many years. I guess that's a positive. It's a badge of honor in many ways. But I did a comparison of the amount of cash they take in every year versus what we did. And at that time, and I think it's probably a little bit less bad than it is today, it's basically every eight hours, they would raise our annual budget. We literally are the most grassroots, most shoestring budget organization you'll ever find. We all work from home, and we are dedicating our time and resources and energy to do everything we can to advance liberty, to put a foundation out there, a strong foundation, so you can work to advance liberty as well. Anyway, Salt Laker says, sell us some bumper stickers. Man, that's not a... That sounds easy, but it really isn't. It really isn't. We do have some that we give out to some of our members as well. Again, that's 10thamendmentcenter.com/members. Israel says, almost like Hancock and Adams. You know, and I love the story about how Thomas Gage, or General Gage, in 1775, June of 75, I believe, shortly, you know, this is less than 2 months after Lexington and Concord, he made a deal. He offered a deal, made a big public proclamation to the people in Massachusetts, in Boston. Hey, let's have peace. There was a peace offer from the British, but the peace officer was, give up your guns, lay down your arms, and then also give up Samuel Adams and John Hancock, and we will leave you alone. And in response, they said, no, not a chance. The Second Continental Congress passed a declaration in response, the Declaration of the Causes and Necessity of Taking Up Arms, drafted by Thomas Jefferson and John Dickinson, that said, no chance. We are only doing this when no threat of you attacking our liberty is on the horizon anymore. So we have to stand up and defend our freedom, which is our birthright in our own native land. Anyways, I am rambling off topic here. I really appreciate you guys being here. Even though this is bad news, I hope it was interesting. I hope it was educational. And I hope we got a little sliver of positive news from New Hampshire and Representative Tom Mannion and the great work of the people over at Free State NH as well. 10thamendmentcenter.com/members to support us. 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty is where I will link to all this stuff in the show notes in a couple of hours. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope your Monday's off to a good start, and I hope to see you next time here on the Path to Liberty.